Welcome back into the Red Zone Podcast. My name is Colton Bartholomew, UW football beat reporter here for the Wisconsin State Journal, joined by a longtime football and basketball beat reporter and now columnist for the State Journal, Jim Polzin. Jim, how are you doing, sir?
Doing well. I'm on location today.
He is up in Green Bay. He is getting ready to be a part of the Tier 1 reporters in the Green Bay Packers organization. That means he's got to be up in Green Bay and get tested and stuff. So Jim's going to be transporting himself back and forth here from the Madison area to Green Bay all year, kind of like Tom Oates used to do. But on today's episode, we want to talk about Big Ten Media Days. Both Jim and I were down there last week. Some pretty interesting sights and sounds, some new coaches in the league. Brett Bielema was kind of the star of the show one of the days that the event was going on. And then we'll get into all of that, what we saw down in Indianapolis. And then we're going to do the first two of our position previews for the Red Zone podcast here. We're going to go through two positions each week for the next 5 weeks, get you ready for football season. It doesn't feel like it, Jim, but we are, what they say, basically 6 weeks away from week one here in the Big Ten and 5 weeks away if you're Nebraska and Illinois and you're playing in week zero. It's pretty nuts.
Yeah, it's crazy. This summer has just flown by, and looking forward to this season, though. I mean, after the weirdness of last season, I'm looking forward to, you know, knock on wood, somewhat of a new normal for this season.
All right, so we have a lot of stuff to get to, and we'll get to it right after this. All right, Jim, let's jump into Big Ten Media Days. It was kind of crazy. It was the first one that I had covered since I got here to the State Journal. I thought, number one, that the Big Ten, given, you know, trying to be as safe as possible and getting all those people together for the first time and getting back together for the first time in over a year, I thought the setup, everything was really nice at Lucas Oil Stadium, and the players were all kind of amenable to getting to everybody's questions and dealing with it. I thought, you know, given the circumstances and the challenge, it was pretty well done.
Yeah, I was a little skeptical. I mean, first of all, the biggest fear all off season was that it just wouldn't happen. You know,
right.
It's such a valuable event for us in the media, just to, you know, go down there and get 2 days worth of access is so, you know, so important. So I went from being worried it wasn't going to, you know, happen to being a little skeptical of how it would work in a giant football stadium. But I agree with you. I thought it was really well run. You know, I thought we were able to have the access that we needed for sure, especially with the UW guys. The UW Athletic Communications guys went out of their way to get us guys when in spots where we normally don't get them, in terms of just, you know, between interviews and stuff. So I thought that part of it went good and, spaced out nicely. So I thought we got a lot accomplished in 2 days.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mentioned it in the intro of the show, but one of the stars of day one of media day was Brett Bielema being back in the league. Obviously now the coach down in Illinois. You could sense the kind of buzz, and there pretty much every reporter that was there wanted to get something from Brett Bielema being back in the Big Ten. And you wrote a really nice column, Jim, about how he has changed and his personality is just different than the guy that was at Wisconsin those years ago. And I thought one line in your story kind of illustrated it best, is that, you know, coaches and reporters are always going to have some contentious parts of the relationship where, you know, the reporters have to be objective and kind of criticize when criticism is needed. Coaches maybe don't always like that. And Brett Bielema, from what I understand, obviously I wasn't here, but wasn't always the best when he didn't like what was written, and sometimes would take it out on you guys. But he said during one of his sessions, you know, kind of apologized to some of the reporters that he wasn't always as, you know, cordial to throughout the years. And you can kind of see there's a sense of this is his chance. People are always going to say redemption in these situations, but I think this is his chance to kind of show the football coach he wants to be versus what he was before.
Yeah, I mean, he's just, you know, I wrote that he's different, and a lot of that is obvious. Just the reasons why are obvious. He's married. He's got two little girls. He's 51 years old. A lot of that's just maturity, and it's going to change you as a person. But I do think there was also, I think he's had a little dose of humility. The Arkansas experience, I think, was humbled him a little bit. You know, things didn't go as well as he had hoped down there, certainly. And getting fired, I think it was a learning experience. You know, he basically admitted, like, he goes 12-1 his first year here, and he thought he was, you know, a mix of Vince Lombardi and Tom Landry and Bill Belichick all wrapped in one. He got a little bit big for his britches and, you know, started to change the way he dealt with us in the media. He was a little more sensitive to criticism because I think he felt he shouldn't be criticized. And so it really, you know, it damaged some relationships, and I think, you know, made him put up the Heisman pose a little bit. He was just, you know, he was standoffish and more willing to fight, really. And so I think that's changed. I think he learned from that experience. He told Josh Whitman, the Illinois AD, that, you know, you're getting the best version of Brett Bielema now. And that's why, cause I'd ask him, like, do you regret anything? Do you regret leaving, UW? And especially, do you regret anything the way it happened? And he said, no, because I learned a lot from it. And, you know, I'm a better coach, a better person because of it. So I don't know. I thought he was pretty open and honest about the changes he's gone through and the reasons for those changes. And, you know, it was like, you know, I wrote in the story, I think it's good to have Brett Bielema in the league. He's not boring at all. I think he'll add some spice to the West Division. And frankly, if he can get Illinois up and running, that's good for the league. I mean, a good Illinois program is a good thing for Wisconsin. It makes it harder to win, but you want this division to be as strong as possible. And you know, we'll see if he can pull that off.
Yeah, especially when you consider the quickly shifting landscape here in college football. And well, that's right. For a topic for another show. But yeah, you don't want too many teams in your conference that aren't kind of pulling their weight and at least being competitive. And so for in the last few years, that's where Illinois has been, unfortunately. And we'll see how quickly Bielema can get that turnaround. One of the things that really stuck out to me from Media Day was, or Media Days, I should say, was one, just there's so many smart, good kids that go to Big Ten schools and play Big Ten football. I was just kind of amazed the amount of professionalism and just ability to handle all these questions. And I mean, in some of these kids, I mean, you're talking, I talked with Brandon Joseph, the Northwestern safety, who had this incredible season last year, All-American as a redshirt freshman. And, you know, so what, he's maybe 20 years old right now. And I thought I was talking to a CEO, the way he was able to handle all these questions and really give thoughtful answers to all of them. And just a great personality there. And there's kind of anecdotes from every one of those kids. I just think that the Big Ten, even as, you know, as I mentioned, this shift in college football where Texas and Oklahoma are trying to jump and then that throws everybody else into whack and trying to pluck teams. Like, I think the Big Ten's in a really good place. And it's one of those things where I feel like the Big Ten understands who they are, I would argue, probably better than any other conference as a whole. Like, yeah, they might not always be there at the end of the day if you're not Ohio State for a championship, but they are kind of serving the purposes that they say they are with school and sports.
Yeah. And just think about how important this event was for a student athlete who is trying to, you know, get his foot in the door with companies in terms of the new name, image, and likeness, you know, what they're allowed to do with that. You know, you're on a podium for an hour and can make yourself look pretty good, right? I mean, you can showcase yourself as a student, as an athlete, just as a person. And, you know, I think a lot of that is just, you know, what a great opportunity for these guys to have that and show that. And who knows who's watching, right? I mean, this thing is all over the place, and who knows who's watching, who's reading a story, and suddenly you might give yourself opportunities that just frankly didn't exist before.
Yeah, for sure. And I would say that the only disappointment I had, Jim, from last week was the fact that the Big Ten wasn't ready to say their COVID policies for this season. We saw the Big 12 and the SEC doing that at their media days. Kevin Warren, the commissioner of the Big Ten, said that they're letting the 14 institutions here in the conference make their own policies, and then they're going to combine those to make a conference policy. I don't know how entirely true that is. If you're the league, you've known that you've had to have something on the books by the time you get to the season. I guess you could say that this kind of follows what they did last year, kind of waiting the last minute to see what they could do. But at the same time, it just seems a little odd that last week of July here, you're going to wait two more weeks to kind of change the rules on these football coaches. And every time a coach was asked about it, you know, they basically said, just give us the rules and we'll adjust to them. And so far the conference just isn't right now giving them the rules.
Yeah. If you're breaking down winners and losers from this Big Ten media event, I think you hit on it good that there's a lot of student athletes, some coaches who came out as winners because of the way they, you know, the things they said, the way they carried themselves. The one guy I would not put in the winner category is Kevin Warren. I thought he had, you know, well, you and I talked about his intro press conference on Thursday was just a little bit weird. I thought they were trying too hard. The conference was trying too hard to make him look good after, you know, a year of getting criticized. And it's almost turned into the Kevin Warren show. And that's the last thing anybody wants or needs. And then when it came time for questions, there were some really good questions from reporters about issues like you just brought up. And every pertinent question, Kevin Warren didn't really have an answer for. He danced his way around it. And now there are a couple of questions about Kevin Warren that he did a pretty good job answering. But, you know, the ones that I think we in the media and I think fans want answered the most, you know, he didn't have a whole lot to say. And I thought that was disappointing because, like you said, he's certainly enough time to prepare for this. And I just thought he could have been a little bit better, well-spoken. And maybe that's where Barry Alvarez comes in. I mean, I think that's the other news to become official down there is that Barry Alvarez is going to be a liaison to between the Big Ten football coaches and the commissioner. And, you know, Barry Alvarez, as we know, is a guy that's pretty smart, street smart, real smart, all that stuff. And I think this conference needs him because, you know, I think he can – you know, be kind of that face of the football part of the Big Ten that maybe Kevin Warren isn't providing at this point.
Yeah. And I did talk to Barry Alvarez down in Indy and he was kind of coy about exactly what his role was going to be or some of the issues that he wanted to address first. But one of the big things he said was that he didn't always feel like there was the right level of communication between the conference and the coaches or vice versa. Like the coaches didn't feel like they had an ability to speak back to the conference and get their agendas or their kind of priorities aligned with what the conference was doing. And that's something that will help so long as, you know, both sides are willing to listen. And, you know, I think that was one thing that got exposed last year is that, you know, the Big Ten was for a long time looked at the conference of stability and everyone kind of fell in line with the conference, but then, that wasn't the case last season with COVID and everything else that was pressing on these schools. So I think that Barry Alvarez's position, I mean, every football coach in this conference could go to Barry Alvarez first and then he can maybe help them craft the message or, you know, go back and forth with them about what they need to do to try to get some of these concerns addressed. And I'm interested to see what the results of that are, how immediate they'll be, if there's anything that we can see this season. But it definitely does seem like it was necessary for where the relationship stood between football coaches, football programs in this conference and the conference itself.
Yeah, I mean, Barry should be able to help, right? He's been a coach. He's been an AD. I can't think of anybody better to kind of serve in that liaison role than a guy who's really been around this conference for more than three decades and has seen a little bit of everything. He's been through changes. He's, you know, he knows the landscape certainly. And I think he's, you know, I think it's a good fit for him. I think he needed something to do after retiring, you know, after unofficially retiring. And I think this is a good spot to land in. And I think he should be a big help to Kevin Warren.
Yeah. And one last quick thing. Paul Chryst said that the Badgers are at least 85% vaccinated. He didn't know the exact number on Friday when we spoke to him, but by the time they get to camp, there'll be at least 85% vaccination rate among the team. And, you know, that's something, as Paul Chryst said, that it's going to help the day-to-day. It's going to help the logistics of how practices, how meetings can run. And it's something that was a pretty big topic throughout the weekend is where a team stood and, you know, what it's going to look like. All right, Jim, let's jump into some position previews here. We're going to start with the offensive backfield. well, we got to start with quarterback. It's football, you know, they're the most important player on the field. When you look at this quarterback situation for the Pack or for the Badgers, I'd say the Packers because you're up there and that's been in the news all week. But when you look at the quarterback situation for the Badgers, Graham Mertz is the obvious starter. He's the incumbent, and you know, I don't want to put undue, you know, weight on a one individual player when you're talking about a football team. But when I just look at the way that this team shakes out and everything that's going to be in place for this team, I really do feel like if Graham Mertz elevates his play and thus brings along some of these pass catchers that are around him, the where this team ends up in my mind, it really rides and is very much connected to how well Graham Mertz plays. Cause if he is, you know, Illinois game good, which maybe that's too high of a bar, but then I think you're talking about an undefeated season. If he's the same guy that he was last season where it's inconsistent, it's shaky, I think you're looking at, you know, 8-4, 7-5, even potentially if you're not as careful with the turnovers. So I really do feel like so much of where this team ends up is riding on Graham Mertz.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And that's usually the case with, you know, with that position, like you said. You know, I guess we talked about this a little bit on our various car rides down and from. I'm willing to give him a little bit of a pass for last season just because of everything he had to deal with, actually getting COVID, his coaches getting COVID, including the guys he works with, the most. Receivers, injuries, you know, just the COVID protocols where you couldn't spend as much time with around your teammates and coaches as possible. There's a lot of reasons why he might have struggled. And I think the hard part, you know, is he came out so good in that Illinois right. game that what was already huge expectations just got even more massive. And then, you know, it all went downhill from there. So, but I you know, this is just kind of gut feeling. I think he will have learned from last year. I think he's the type that will have used it as a learning experience, and I expect him to be much better. I don't expect the Illinois version week after week after week. I mean, it's just that was essentially throwing a perfect game, but right. I think something just south of that, you know, an above average quarterback, a very good quarterback, is a realistic expectation. I'm not first team All Big Ten, All American. I'm not expecting that yet, although in time I think he has that talent. But I think we're going to see a very good quarterback. And then I don't know that he has to be great. I think there's enough around him that he doesn't have to be great, but he's got to be the guy that can, you know, make the throws on third down, can get the guy, get the team in and out of the offense. And you know, I just think I think a year will be better for him. I think he's just going to be more mature. And I think, as I said earlier, he'll use last season as a learning tool. And you know, for the sake of the Badgers, he hopefully will have grown from it.
Yeah, I totally agree with you in the sense of his personality. He seems like a guy that took the lumps of last season and was able to take positives out of them, even though in the moment they weren't great. And I think one of the I don't know. You tell me, Jim, do you think it's good that if you look at the guys that are backing him up, there's really not anybody that's going to be able to challenge him, in my opinion. When you look at guys like Chase Wolf, Danny Vandenboom behind him as they were last season, you've got an incoming freshman in Deacon Hill. They just had their walk-on freshman from last year, Daniel Wright, go into the transfer portal. So the room lost a player there. But I can't decide in my head if it's good that he knows, like, hey, even if I've got a bad day, it's not like there's somebody breathing up down my neck for the spot. Or if it's one of those situations where he might need that. He might have benefited from, I don't know if a true competition, but at least somebody behind him that's on the same level and can push him to make sure that each day he's his best.
Yeah, it's a good point. I haven't really thought of that, but I just think that if last season wasn't enough to motivate him and push him to use every second he had in the offseason to get better and to grow from it, then I'm not sure what will. I don't think he should need a guy pushing him for playing time. I don't get the sense that he's a guy that's going to relax and you know, just assume that he's the guy. you know, there's nobody behind him pushing him. So I don't know. I understand like how that can be a good thing. Competition always is good, right? I just don't think in this case, considering what happened last year, that Graham Mertz should need that.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. And I'm very excited to see what he looks like in camp, because spring practices had sessions I felt like that you could see, like, oh, he's got some good zip on the ball. The timing's better. His feet are more under control. But there were just other times where, you know, when you're going half speed or you're not really, I mean, in his particular case, they had no running backs. So, you know, fake to Quan Easterling in a play action, the backup fullback, not exactly as effective as one to Jalen Berger or somebody like that. So I'm really interested to see what fall camp looks like for him, because I think that's going to be our best indicator where he's going to be. And I do want to say, I'm not trying to knock the guys that are behind Graham Mertz in the quarterback room. And I honestly think Deacon Hill has a chance in a few years to be a really productive quarterback in this system. I was not impressed by the performances of Chase Wolf last season, the times that he did come in. And I think it did limit some of the options that Paul Christ and the staff had, because even when Graham Mertz was struggling, you know, Wolf wasn't showing enough that he could come in. And I know he, you know, helped them win the Minnesota game, but he also gave the Gophers a chance to get back into it with a pretty errant interception that I thought was a bad decision to begin with. So I think just this backup quarterback room is so up and down. I want to see what they look like too, as much as I want to see what Graham Mertz looks like.
Yeah, I agree. And go back to your point about spring versus fall too. Like, I've always noticed a difference. The urgency is ramped up. You're preparing for an opponent for a good chunk of camp. It's so hard to judge guys in the spring, because usually, as you said, the injuries are such that you don't have a full load. I mean, you don't have the full complement of players around you. You're really focusing a lot on individual improvement in the spring. I think in the fall, you're kind of trying to form this identity and get ready for a game. And Frank, and this year, you're getting ready for a really big game. I mean, that Penn State opener is huge. And, you know, that's not always the case. Sometimes you're getting ready for an opponent where you pretty much know you're going to win. So I would expect the urgency to be ramped up pretty high once camp starts next week. And, you know, again, I think that's a good thing for Graham Mertz. I think he's probably itching to prove that last year was, you know, the better part of last year was an aberration, and that he's, you know, he's more of the guy in the Illinois game than the rest of the season. And you know, we'll see where he is. I mean, I think you said it, we're going to see in camp, assuming we get to watch a good chunk of camp practices, we'll see where he's at. And I assuming everybody around him stays healthy, I'm expecting this offense to bounce back in a pretty big way this fall.
I'm with you. All right, let's jump to the running backs quickly here. I think the assumption has been that Jalen Berger is kind of the guy as the leading rusher coming back from last year. It's kind of wild to think about that he only played in four of the games last season, because he sat out the Illinois game with some lingering injuries from camp, and then got COVID late in the year, so he missed a couple of games as well. But the guys that they brought in through recruiting and then the transfer portal this year, when you look at Ches Malusi coming in from Clemson, and then you talk about Braylon Allen coming in as an incoming freshman, Loyal Crawford, Jackson Aker, I'm just Antoine Roberts, I should also throw in there. This room's loaded, and I don't know quite what that means, because, you know, on the one hand, if you're being really optimistic, you could be like, hey, we're going to go back to the, you know, three guys rushing for almost 1,000 yards and all that type of stuff. Or you're going to say that's good depth behind two guys in Berger and Malusi that should take most of the snaps. But I think there's just a lot of stuff to be figured out here in this room. And I wonder how they're going to be able to divide enough snaps that all these guys at least get a look.
Yeah. And I wonder if they're just going to end up focusing on the what we know right now. Well, we don't know what the depth chart looks like, but we assume the depth chart is Berger, Malusi, Braylon Allen, right? I mean, that's
yeah. I mean, you got to throw guys like Isaac Garrido and Julius Davis in there.
Oh, Garrido too. Yeah.
But what do you do? I mean, if they're on the field, that's always you could change Garrido's name to Garrido when he's healthy because we haven't seen him.
Yeah, and I was on Zach Heilprin's podcast down in Indy too, and I said the same thing. Like, Garrido's a guy that I'm always intrigued by because he's so naturally athletic and gifted, but until he proves he can stay healthy, it's difficult. So let's you know, and Julius Davis is the same thing to an even greater degree. He just has not been able to stay healthy at all. So yes, there's a lot of options there. And some years you can have a pretty clear cut number one, and then you're sorting out the rest. And you know, you kind of know what you have in number one. I'm not sure they know what they have necessarily in Jalen Berger yet. There were a lot of positives from last season. But you know, I think the number one, you want to establish some depth in camp, but you also want to establish who are going to be your guy, who's going to be your guy, who's going to be, is it a 1A and 1B thing? Is it 1A, 1B, 1C thing? I think there's a lot to sort out those first couple of weeks. And, you know, I'm anxious, you know, what's really going to happen as you know, and what happens all the time is that first scrimmage will be telling. And whether we'll get to see that or not is, you know, who knows. But those first couple scrimmages, I think, is where guys – really start to show themselves. And that's how Jonathan Taylor burst on the scene is, you know, those first scrimmages, it was pretty clear to the coaches like, oh, this kid's got something. So maybe someone emerges from these first, you know, these first 10, 14 days of practice and we'll know a lot more. But yeah, I know we started with the quarterbacks, but I have more certainty. I don't know if that's the right word, but more confidence in that position right now. Than I do in the running backs, because I just think there's so many unanswered questions with that group, just in terms of, you know, not even knowing who the guy is going to be, and then not knowing what's, you know, what's around him either.
Yeah, I'm fascinated to see what Ches Malusi brings to that backfield. Number one, because Paul Chris mentioned this at Media Days, that they were looking at the portal to try to bring in an experienced running back. You know, they're looking for the right fit and all those things, but at the end of the day, it was, hey, if we can find a guy that fits, that's experienced at running back, let's get him in. But then we're talking about a different level of experience where this guy's been in the college football playoff the past 2 years. You know, he's been on the field for a national championship. It's kind of wild to think about that guy's coming in to potentially, you know, what if he has a great camp and it becomes he's 1A and Berger is 1B, like, the talent isn't really a question with him. He's that level of athlete, and he's shown it in ACC games before. I'm just maybe concern's not the right word, but I want to see him behind this backfield, a little bit of a different running style than what Clemson was doing. And then not only that, not having the advantage of, if you're standing back there in shotgun, standing next to Trevor Lawrence and having three NFL-bound wide receivers on the outside that defense has to worry about at the same time. So I'm really anxious to see where Ches Malusi fits in, what he looks like, because if it does become a 1-2 punch with him and Berger, I mean, you're talking about one of the best backfields in the conference, or, you know, how he fits in really could become you could make a stable of backs out of what you have here that becomes even more dangerous with a guy like Malusi.
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking like best case scenario is the one you just described, where Berger and Malusi are 1A and 1B. Garrido's a guy you can use in different ways as a weapon. Just get the ball in his hands on the perimeter and let him use his speed. And then you still have Braylon Allen as kind of a wild card. I mean, he's really a guy we expected to play linebacker until you know,
the summer,
until
he really.
Got here. Yeah, until the summer, really. And so there's just kind of this great unknown. I think they're blown away by his athleticism and power. And I think there's probably the potential for him to be a really good running back. I don't know when that'll be. But yeah, I mean, that's the best case scenario, is that you end up having four pretty good options. And right now, I don't know. I don't know how many you can say that you have. There's so much unknown, like I said. So we'll see how that plays out. I'm intrigued by this position. I'm not down on this position. I just think there's so many questions that are going to get answered in those first 2 weeks of camp. I think it's probably the position on the team that you just, there's so much unknown, and we're gonna learn so much about these guys in the first couple weeks.
Yeah, it's definitely gonna be a fun one. And very, very quickly here at the end, fullback, we know it's gonna be John Schnell to start. Quan Easterling's behind him. I bet there's gonna be somebody that started as a walk-on somewhere else that ends up rounding out that fullback position. I don't see them going into the year with just two guys getting reps there, or maybe it's a tight end that they converts. But I do want to say that I do think John Schnell showed throughout last season that in those short yardage situations where Wisconsin kind of is one of the few schools left that trusts the fullback in those spots, he's dependable there. And that's really what you're looking for, to open holes and be dependable on a third and short. So I think they're pretty set there, an experienced guy like Schnell.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, Easterling's a guy that we don't totally know a ton about yet, but I know they're high on his capability, on his talent. You hit it on the head. I think they will use tight ends more, because I think they got a growing group of guys in that tight end room that they like. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them use a lot of two tight end sets and have one of them set up in the backfield at times. You know, we all know that how creative Paul Chris can be with his tight ends and fullbacks. So I think we're going to see a lot of those guys. I think he was asked about it down in Indy. Somebody asked him about fullbacks, and you can just see his eyes light up, because he loves using those guys, and he loves using tight ends. So I think he'll get creative with what he has, because I do think they have some decent numbers at tight end that they can move guys around a little bit.
Absolutely. All right, Jim, as we wrap up the show here, we've got some stuff on Mastin.com for you guys to read from Big Ten Media Days about where the conference sits with their COVID protocols. Jim's Brett Bielema story that we mentioned, a really good story about how Paul Christ, took care of his players' mental health throughout the pandemic, and really relished a chance in Indy to go out with his players and just spend time with them away from football. Jim wrote that as well. So lots of good stuff on Mastin.com from there. And I know we've got some stuff coming from this week. Like we mentioned before in the show, Jim's up at Badger Camp Packer Camp. He's up in Green Bay watching the Packers, or about to watch the Packers get their camp underway. So lots of good stuff on Mastin.com. Make sure you guys are subscribed there. I'm sure we're running some kind of deal. We seem to always be able to get you guys a deal if you sign up for a digital subscription or something like that. So check that out and make sure you get subscribed here for football season. There's going to be a lot of great stuff coming your way. Next week, we're going to do the wide receivers and the tight ends for our position previews. So check that out when that comes out next week. Anything from you, Jim?
Nope. I'll be writing a lot of Aaron Rodgers the next couple of days. And, next week with media day for UW football going, it's going to get busy in a hurry here. And before we know it, the opener is going to be upon us.
Sure is. Good stuff. Football season's always crazy, but it's always fun. But all right. For Jim Polzin, I'm Cole Martholomew. Thank you guys very much for listening.